Hey, everybody, this episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN, expressvpn.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie.
Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. This is producer Andrew filling in for Charlie Kirk. Always honored to be able to do that. We have a lot to go over, including creepy Cuomo hanging on to power, defiant in the face of prestigious Democrats calling for his resignation or impeachment, and yet he's clinging on. Still more news out of California. The recall of Gavin Newsom marches on. Things are looking up for our friend Larry Elder, and I have the information as to why. A really important trend happening in the electorate in the United States is playing out front and center in California. Guys, buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
A lot of people ask me, Charlie, how do you know so much about American history? The answer is not from school. As many of you know, I did not go to formal college. Actually, I didn't go to college at all. So my education has been a process. I've always been committed to learning and diving deep into ideas. And one source of truth and knowledge has been the greatest partner in that pursuit of learning, and that is Hillsdale College. American history and civics education, they're quite honestly at a turning point. And the Hillsdale 1776 curriculum, they are teaching the truth. And they have downloadable curriculum for you and your children for free at charliehillsdale.com. That's Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E, F-O-R, Hillsdale.com. It's available not only to teachers, but also to any single one of you. But also, you know, when you go to charlieforhillsdale.com, you're able to then, it's free of charge. There's no charge. You go through it, you enter your email, and you could take online courses. So every single day, I do my best to try to schedule at least 30 minutes to an hour to take some online courses. So I have my certificate, and I have passed the course in Constitution 101, the intro to the Constitution. I'm about to finish the introduction to Western philosophy. I finished the introduction to Aristotle, How to Live a Good Life. And they have a new one called The Great American Story that I'm taking, and it's phenomenal. If you say, Charlie, how do I get my kids to know history? Literally pay them to take these courses. It's that good. The Great American Story, it's charlieforhillsdale.com. That's charliehillsdale.com. Maybe you're more of a World War II fan. They have a whole course on that called The Second World Wars. Maybe you're a fan of Shakespeare. They have a course on that, Hamlet and the Tempest. Maybe you're a fan of theology. They have a whole course on Theology 101. How about on the Greek Wars, Athens and Sparta, Winston Churchill and statesmanship? These are free of charge, amazingly rigorous courses that will get you to appreciate the country, what it means to be a human being, where our rights come from at charliehillsdale.com. Hillsdale, we are so honored to partner with them on The Charlie Kirk Show. Our children deserve to be taught the truth through a sound curriculum created by teachers, not bureaucrats, and uphold the dignity of each individual. So download the 1776 curriculum right now at charliehillsdale.com, and you yourself should at least carve out 20 minutes a day to try and learn something new. These courses can be downloaded, they could be podcasts, and there's little tests after them to make sure that you are comprehending what you are learning. And about after 10 courses, you get your certificate. It's one of the coolest feelings in the world. You feel like you are retaining that knowledge and you have a better understanding of what's happening in America. CharlieForHillsdale.com. Phenomenal partners. Please check it out right now.
There is a lot going on, especially in the New York area. We mentioned yesterday that New York had somehow managed to become the center of the world once again. It feels like the once great city of New York, which is still a great city. We love New York. We love spending time there. But it's crime-riddled. It's dirty from everything that we've heard. It's going through some rough days. De Blasio has been a disaster. I'm broadcasting from California, which has had similar issues. And it is a shadow of its once great self. Nevertheless, it seems like the themes of today is that Cuomo is somehow clinging to life, barely, after a slew of top Democrat officials have come out against him, calling for his resignation, which is a fairly dramatic turn of events for the once darling of the Democrat Party, the man that they lifted up, they being the media establishment, the left, lifted up as the counterweight to President Trump. He has fallen in a spectacular fashion. The New Yorker, this is the New Yorker's headline. How on earth does Cuomo survive this? The sexual harassment report wasn't a bombshell. It was a nuclear blast. And yet, which is tremendous, which is a tremendous thing for the New Yorker to say. I mean, he has become, and may this be a lesson to all of you out there, from sea to shining sea and everywhere in between, the blessed flyover country, that when you become expendable in politics, do not be surprised when your friends turn on you. And I use friends with air quotes. I use it almost ironically. The New Yorker continues. So many shoes have dropped in the Andrew Cuomo sexual harassment saga that the governor could open a floor shine outlet on I-90. And each time, as each allegation piled up and each Democrat official called on him to resign, dozens of members of the state legislature, state Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, most of the state's congressional delegation, U.S. Senators Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand, Mayor Bill de Blasio, it surely seemed like the end of Cuomo's long reign. And yet it wasn't. So this is the lesson. We see this from Governor Ralph Northam in Virginia. When a scandal so big hits you like a tidal wave and you're a Democrat, what do you do? Do you resign? Of course not. Even when they call for you to resign, you don't resign. You just hunker down, you punt. You issue a series of embarrassing saying that this is not the way that it actually was. This is not what happened. These facts are being misrepresented. And then you ask for the Attorney General, Letitia James, to look into the allegations, standing with whatever remaining elected officials will stand next to you. And you said, we will get through this. I'm being misrepresented by the media and by these accusers. Governor Ralph Northam's instance, you just say, well, I don't know if I wore blackface or the KKK hood. So this interesting dynamic where the Democrat Party has lost its utility with the good governor from New York. And so he is now expendable and they are throwing him overboard. But he is fighting for his political life and he's not going to give in overnight. So what happened in Virginia? We saw that in Virginia, it didn't really matter. The governor is still the governor of Virginia. And guess what? That gives Cuomo every single piece of evidence he needs to suggest that he will survive this if only he sticks to the script and waits it out. Because guess what? The media cycle will continue spinning. He will inevitably become second on the news feed, and then third, and then fourth, and then he'll be on page A17 of the New York Times, and nobody will be talking about it anymore. All it's going to take is one international big story or another national tragedy, God forbid, and he'll survive. That's the way this works, folks. So what we are seeing is a massive, massive dynamic playing out that has been playing out really for the last 4 or 5 years, and that is Democrat privilege. If you are a Democrat and you commit the most heinous of acts, and let's be honest, sexual assault is not limited, sexual harassment is not limited to the Democrat Party. But it doesn't matter what you do, you will be allowed to survive if you have Democrat privilege. If the shoe was on the other foot, can you just imagine if the shoe was on the other foot? A Republican would have been forced out of office like by the end of the day. That would have been completely the case. The Republican would have been forced out of office, and that is everything you need to know about the way that the system works and why Americans are losing their faith in the institutions that we so long have trusted and believed in. Now, how this story is connected to the larger media narrative is truly, I think it's really profound. So you might think that this Governor Cuomo story is just sort of an isolated case over here. But what it actually is indicative of is this larger distrust, this movement of distrust against our institutions, where not just conservatives, but independents, free thinkers, immigrants, minority groups are losing trust in the institutions that have governed and guided us for generations. Why? Because we find them to be corrupt. We find them to be lacking in accountability. And we find them to be utterly incapable of holding each other accountable. And this is the instance that we'll see with Governor Cuomo. Will something actually come out of this? Even Joe Biden has called for his resignation. We said Kirsten Gillibrand and Chuck Schumer. Now they're saying that Morris did a smash poll overnight. 6 in 10 New Yorkers prefer that he would resign. So what's going to happen? I actually have to confess here. I don't care about this story. I don't care about it. Now, I'm not saying that I don't care about the victims and what happened. What I'm simply suggesting is that Governor Cuomo should have been removed for his COVID policies, which killed thousands, especially senior citizens, through negligent policymaking. And by the way, this exposes another thing that Governor Cuomo has been guilty of. He tried to cover up what he did to senior citizens. And then secondly, what we've seen in the sexual harassment scandal is he tried to cover up and besmirch his accusers. This is an embarrassing scandal. It's also incredibly creepy and troubling that the governor of one of the largest, most influential states in the country has behaved so poorly. And yet he had his friends in the media, like his brother, defending every move, consulting, helping, giving him cover fire on the nightly news, and lifting him up as some darling that was going to save the nation from the great Donald Trump. It's very dishonest, it's very creepy, and it's disappointing, but not surprising.
Did you ever read the fine print that appears when you start browsing in incognito mode? It says that your activity might be visible to your employer, your school, or your internet service provider. How can they even call it incognito? To really stop seeing people from seeing the sites you visit, you need to do what I do and use ExpressVPN. Think about all the times you've used Wi-Fi at a coffee shop, a hotel, or even at your parents' house. Without ExpressVPN, every site you visit could be logged by the admin of that network. And that's still true when you're in incognito mode. ExpressVPN is an app that encrypts all of your network's data and reroutes it through a network of secure servers. Your private online activity stays just that, private. ExpressVPN works on all your devices and is super easy to use. The app literally has one button. You tap it and connect, and your browsing activity is secure from prying eyes. So stop letting strangers invade your privacy online. Protect yourself at expressvpn.com/charlie. Use my link at expressvpn.com/charlie to get 3 extra months free. That's expressvpn.com/charlie to learn more.
The report this morning out of CNN saying that 93% of new COVID cases in the United States, of which they say there's like 80,000 new cases of COVID, they say that 93% is attributable to the death or to the Delta variant of coronavirus. Now, I've seen a lot of people, they've sent me links, they're sending me this, that. They're saying that that's impossible to know because there's no way to test. The PCR test does not know how to distinguish between which variant of COVID you may or may not have. Well, that is true, but I do happen to think that based on modeling and some of the statistics that researchers are using, that it is likely that this new variant is probably the breakthrough variant. So if Delta had you worried about shutdowns, well, I've got news for you. Now we've got the Lambda variant. And I've warned about this too, by the way, when I've guested for Charlie. I think there's an Epsilon variant that they're observing. Lambda COVID variant behind 1,000 cases in U.S. shows vaccine resistance. This is from Newsweek. The Lambda variant of COVID-19 may be more resistant to vaccines and is highly infectious, researchers at Japan's University of Tokyo have warned in a new scientific paper published on July 28th. The study is yet to be peer-reviewed. So, you know, according to doctors that I know, it's basically, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But it's still interesting as far as a finding goes. Like the Delta variant, Lambda is highly transmissible, but Japanese researchers believe that three mutations in the variant's spike protein make it more resistant to antibodies induced by vaccination. So this was trending on Twitter this morning, and I was like, Lambda? Oh gosh, here we go. So now it's eclipsed 1,000 cases, 1,037 cases of COVID-19 in the U.S. Again, I don't know how they are testing for this. Likely, if it is at 1,000 cases, it's probably much more because the testing for these variants is rather involved. So this variant was first identified in Peru in August of 2020, where it has now become the dominant strain of the virus, and it has been reported in 29 countries, including the U.S., So I gave my friend Aaron Ginn a call this morning just to get some intel from him saying, you know what, you know, if they can't test for this stuff, you know, do you believe that 93% is right on the Delta variant? He seems to be convinced that it's probably accurate. Now, you know, whether it is or isn't, his main point, and Aaron Ginn is a guy that it wrote about the alarmism, COVID alarmism in May, or is it actually in March of 2020, and he wrote it on his Medium page, and they took it down after the thing went viral. And then the Wall Street Journal gave him a platform and let him write about it. But the point he's making to me, and I think it's important to share with all of you, is that Delta does not seem to be increasing the death rates, okay? So this is what's tremendously important. We're seeing a revival of pandemic porn, as we call it. The hysteria is rising to new heights, as evidenced by a new poll. So this is a new poll that just came out from Yahoo News YouGov. It says majority of Americans favor public mask mandates per new Yahoo News YouGov poll. Now, 55% favor making it mandatory to wear masks in public, 45% opposed. Okay, so you check 55% favor, 45% opposed. Back in June, the public opposed mask mandates 60-40. What does that tell you? It tells you that all of this messaging from the White House, from the mainstream news media, has changed public perception in a blink. That's why people like those of us that work on this show, people like you listening, need to be active, need to be passionate, and need to start pushing back with actual facts. And the facts are that Delta, while it's more transmissible, does not appear to be more deadly. We are talking about the Delta variant. We're talking about specifically the alarmism surrounding this. And I want to take you to a Daily Mail article here. It says mask-free Sweden is close to zero daily COVID deaths as country's chief epidemiologist plays down fears over Delta variant's infectiousness. So here's the bullet points. In the last 14 days, Sweden recorded average of less than one COVID death per day, 0.6. So they've been averaging 0.6 deaths per day, which compares with 74 deaths in the UK and 329 deaths per day in the US over that same period. And Sweden dropped its last remaining mask rule for public transport on July 1st. Nevertheless, in the UK and the US, they're going to be unleashing further mask mandates. The public sentiment has shifted dramatically. So again, folks, know your facts. Know that it may be more infectious. It may be more contagious. But we actually don't really know that as well. But nevertheless, what we're seeing is that it's not more deadly, at least not significantly so. So this is from the epidemiologist. His name is Dr. Tegnell, and he's the lead epidemiologist in Sweden. He said there's still a lot we don't know about the Delta strain, and that it is wrong to draw any far-reaching conclusions. Now, what is he talking about? He's talking about what we've been doing in the United States, where we've been comparing the Delta virus in terms of contagiousness to that of chickenpox. And Dr. Tegnell is saying, hey, wait a second. We know chickenpox really, really well. We've been studying it for years. We know exactly how infectious it is. And by the way, as an aside, when we're talking about chickenpox, there used to be something they call chickenpox parties. One kid would get chickenpox, and all the kids in the neighborhood would come around, they'd play, and they'd get it out of the way, and everybody get chickenpox and move on. You only get it once. Now they got a vaccination for that. You got to ask yourself why. Nevertheless, here we are, vaccines for everything, mandated, and people are calling it a public good. Now, I want to take you from that to another insight that I think is really interesting. So again, I was talking to Eric Ginn this morning, trying to make sense of all this because he's a statistician who pays particularly close attention to all of this. He's basically saying that this is seasonal. This increase is seasonal. So track with me here. This is a really important thing to understand. It is seasonal. Now, what do I mean by that? It's the summer. So my first instinct was like, what are you talking about, Aaron? This is the summertime. It's hot. Seasonality should be in the winter, which it is. But according to Aaron, last summer we saw an increase in the alpha strain coronavirus, the original coronavirus, right around August. Now, ask yourself why that might be. What happens in the summer months that changes the behavior of the average American? Well, July and then August tends to be the hottest time in the year. So what happens when it gets really hot? People turn up their AC and they flock indoors. If you've ever been to Phoenix, Arizona, when it's 110 degrees outside and you don't want to be outside, so what do? You get inside and they got the AC cranked and it's like freezing inside. You got to put a sweatshirt on. Like if you go to Turning Point USA headquarters, everybody's got blankets on when they're sitting at their desk because it's so cold inside. Because if you don't have it cranked, you lose it. You lose the AC instantly and it's tough to get it back. You got to crank the machine extra. So everybody keeps all their indoor spaces really cold. This is true throughout the entire American South. People stay inside a lot more during the summer months because it gets too unbearably hot. They make it really cold and people get sick again. It's actually just sort of a man-made dynamic, which according to Aaron Ginn, again, give him a follow on Twitter. He's a great follow on Twitter. Very smart guy. We have some disagreements probably on vaccines in general, maybe with Aaron, but very smart guy, A-G-I-N-N-T. That's at A-G-I-N-N-T. I want to give him some attribution there because he's been very good on this. He's come on the podcast before, the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. So just remember that there are seasonality elements to coronavirus that are inescapable, just like it is with the flu. It's going to be with coronavirus. All right, so that's my point, guys. Maybe it's more contagious. Maybe there's a seasonality element to this. Do not give in. to the panic. And I just want to play one particularly great clip, and I'll narrate it if I have to. This is clip 58. This is AOC, the AOC photo op. All right, so she wonderfully gets caught, and this has been happening everywhere. You got Muriel Bowser getting caught without mask. Obama was going to throw a party for his 60th birthday party with 700 people. He just canceled that because of the backlash, and he cited the Delta variant. And then you've got AOC here in this photo op. It looks to be on the steps of the Capitol. She's hanging out with just dozens. I mean, this is maybe hundreds of people just milling about on the steps of the Capitol, just hanging out. And then they want to take a photo. So what does she do? She puts on her masks. That's right. She puts on her mask. Let's go ahead and play cut 58.
Let's take a quick photo so we can keep the pressure up so other colleagues can come out here. Yeah?
And there she is. She knows it's about to snap the pictures, putting on the mask. Oh, there you go. Senator Markley from Massachusetts right next to her. And now a minute later, the mask is back off, folks. So she's not afraid of the Delta variant. Why? Because she's 30 years old and she knows she doesn't have to be. Now, back to the vaccine. We are not anti-vax people here. We are pro-freedom and we are anti-mask mandate. Okay, very, very important distinction. I have all my vaccines besides the COVID. I'm not getting the COVID vaccine. I have already gotten COVID, and I have the antibodies because I've donated blood, and they tell me that I have the antibodies. But I am not anti-vax. I am anti-vax mandate. It's a very important distinction. Don't let them paint you otherwise. Now, we have a rolling average of how many COVID deaths that we have in the United States. And it looks like, if I can get this cursor from the New York Times, so yesterday we had 668, so it was up, but our seven-day average of COVID deaths, according to the New York Times, is 414. But again, we saw this uptick, and if you look, you can look at this yourself, just literally Google, and I don't recommend Google very often, but how many people died of COVID yesterday? That was what I typed. The first thing that comes up is the New York Times statistics, new cases and deaths. If you look in July and August, you see a slight uptick, and then it went down in the fall, and then over December and January, it spiked up. Okay, and that's actually when we had our biggest surge. So what we are experiencing is a seasonal, it's normal for this part of the season because people tend to go inside with too much AC. It's a problem. All right, folks, I'm going to pivot. We got a few more minutes left in this segment, and I want to pivot to something near and dear to my California heart, okay? Love you all in New York and all of our listeners on the East Coast. Cuomo's a disaster. We're going to be keeping on that story. You never fear. But I want to turn our attention to the left coast where I am broadcasting out of today. So Charlie touched on this yesterday during the show. It's about the Emerson College polling that came out that it sent shockwaves, folks. Now, if you're in California politics, it sent shockwaves because what it basically illuminated to the prognosticators and the punditry class in California, which is so often fixated, by the way, on national politics that some of the local political trends get missed, is that one, the is within the statistical margin of error that Gavin Newsom will get recalled. So to refresh your memory, Gavin Newsom, when we do our balloting here in California, 50% plus one vote is all it takes. 50% plus one vote is all it takes to trigger the recall. And then the person that wins only needs to win a plurality of the vote. Okay? So right now, this Emerson polling made headlines because, guess what? Our friend and our fellow Salem Radio Network colleague, Larry Elder, is currently leading in the polling with 23%. John Cox is at 7%. Caitlyn Jenner is at 7%. And Kevin Kiley is at 5%. Now, and Kevin Faulkner, the former mayor of San Diego, is at 4%. Now, 40% are still undecided. So there's a lot of decisions that still have to be made. But Larry has come in and completely energized the California recall. Masterful, masterful move. Our friend Dennis Prager helped encourage him. Dennis has come on the show and explained his journey to doing this. Now, I will say that the most ardent supporters of the recall should not surprise you. That would be conservatives. That's fine. We understand that majority of Republicans, 80% support the recall, 16% say keep. I don't know who these 16%, I've never met one. They must be a unicorn. I really don't know where that's coming from. Now, independents, 54 to 34% are in favor of the recall. But here's what's really, really striking. Now, men are split 47-47. Good for the men. The women need to come up. They're at 44% recall, 51% keep. So they are slightly in favor of keeping Gavin Newsom. But here is the weirdest part about it. Now, there's two things that should be really encouraging for Republicans in the state of California. One of the biggest movers of this Emerson poll was crime. It got a 6% increase in those who were polled that said crime was their number one issue. That bodes well for law and order Republicans. And here's the kicker. Latinos support the recall. I'll say that again. Latinos in California support recalling Governor Gavin Newsom.
From critical race theory in your children's classroom to policy changes under the current administration, you need to know what's happening from a news source you can trust. Unfortunately, most media outlets opt for shameless virtue signaling and state propaganda in lieu of the truth. It's an insult to your intelligence, which is why my good friends, great people, at The Daily Wire are providing an alternative. From The Daily Wire newsroom comes Morning Wire, a daily morning news podcast that gives you the facts you need to know first. Brought to you by Daily Wire editor-in-chief John Bickley and co-host Georgia Howe, Morning Wire will wake you up with the latest developments in politics, sports, culture, and education, all with a heavy emphasis on the truth. Episodes drop weekday, every weekday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. So subscribe now to hear the trailer. And if you like what you hear, leave a 5-star review to help The Daily Wire provide a source that all Americans can wake up with and trust. Each episode will be short with only enough room to fit the facts so you can be sure your breakfast isn't being served with a side of somebody else's agenda. Seriously, go subscribe as soon as you can. The Daily Wire is now launching The Morning Wire. It's called Morning Wire. Check it out.
Larry Elder has a real chance of winning the recall election. I mean, I will tell you, before he announced it, was like in California, everybody was kind of like, eh, I don't know, we're losing steam. Like, lockdowns have gone away. That was a real animating element of why Gavin Newsom got recalled. But a couple things have happened. Well, the Delta variant is surging and masks are coming back. So far, not where I live, thank goodness. But I'm going to try and defy that and not comply. You should do the same. But I will say that that has animated people. But then Larry Elder jumping into the race has animated people. He's a Trump-supporting, loud, proud, great communicator. He's black, which is, like, you know, extremely helpful in this crazy state, I will tell you. The name, the media attention that he gets, the name recognition, the name ID is all tremendous. It is a perfect storm. Larry Elder could be the next governor of California. This is a real, real possibility. Now, why is that? It's because conservatives are stepping up. They're going to vote for it. But surprise, surprise, the biggest reason why is that Hispanics, that's right, Hispanics are the only racial group in favor of the recall. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story. And I don't mean for this to sound patronizing or anything of the sort. It's just I have a project that I was working on, a construction project. My main contractor is Hispanic. Now, he was born in Mexico, but he married a Mexican-American. So she's a citizen. She was down in Mexico for a vacation. It ended up being a prolonged vacation. They fell in love. They got married. He moved here. So he's an amazing, amazing guy. Now, those of you who've listened to me guest host the show know that I have basically zero tolerance for illegal immigration. It is my probably my top two issue of what I think is wrong, because I think a lawlessness at the border leads to lawlessness in the interior, leads to a breakdown of law and order, chaos ensues. It's just insane, right? I think it's despicable, I think, on many fronts. That doesn't mean I don't like individual Hispanics, right? I'm not like one of these crazy racist leftists that believe in racial essentialism or race essentialism, which everything is defined by race. No, it's not at all. My contractor is an amazing guy. Amazing guy. And I remember talking to him during the run-up to the election. And I just said, hey, who are you voting for? Let's just lay it out on the table. I like you. You like me. We're at that level now. It's all good. Like, I don't care what you say. I was expecting him to say Biden. And I was like, yeah, well, I'm going to defend this. This should be fun. He said Trump. He said 100% Trump. And that surprised me. I said, well, why is that? And he just said that he thought Biden was kind of, less than masculine. And he said, you know what? Listen, since Trump's been in office, I've been making lots of money. My wallet's full. My family's good. My business is growing. I've got zero complaints. Why? Let's keep the good times rolling. And I said, is that like, you know, do you feel that way with a lot of your friends? Like, you know, what are you guys talking about? He said, I don't know anybody who's supporting Biden. He's like, we like Trump. He's more macho, which I thought was amazing. Now, for those on the live stream, I want to play a picture. I want to post a picture. 63. This is a graph actually compiled by data. It was provided by the Daily Mail, but it came from New York Times originally. This is a graph that depicts how Latino and Asian voting changed between 2016 and 2020. Now, what you are not going to hear about in the news too much today is that Joe Biden is doing a pivot internally. He realizes that the Latino and Asian voting slipped for Democrats from 2016 to 2020, and he realizes that it's slipping even more heading into the midterms of 2022, and they are trying to do outreach big time because they're panicking that they are losing this vote. So you see in the Rio Grande Valley in Texas, you saw this in Miami, we saw these big surges in turnout for Republicans in these minority communities that the Democrats have long taken for granted. Now, everywhere we saw more voting, right? Everywhere there was more voting in 2020 from 2016 because of mail-ins. But think about this. In Los Angeles, 78% of that increased voting went to Donald Trump. 78% of the extra votes went to Donald Trump. This is incredible. This trend is a national trend, and it might flip the fortunes of California and the nation for conservatives. Watch it closely, my friends.
All right, you might be hearing a little crunch, because I'm eating something that's really special. So we have a new partner here on the Charlie Kirk Show, and they're pretty awesome. They're called Uprising Foods. Now hear me out. 95% of Americans live in the fiber gap. Over 9 in 10 are deficient in fiber. Fiber is one of the most well-studied nutrients of all time and is a bona fide superfood for most people. Until Uprising came along, it was nearly impossible to get all the fiber each day because it's literally impractical, completely impractical, to hit 30 grams each day. You have to have two full heads of broccoli, okay? These people made it simple to enjoy and hit your high fiber numbers. You want to push back against Big Pharma? Hit your fiber numbers, everybody. They've cracked the code on healthy bread. So they send you like a Rubik's Cube of bread, okay? It's really interesting. Only 2 net carbs per serving, 6 grams of protein, okay, and 9 grams of fiber. If a biohacker and a high-end farm market baker had a baby, it'd be Uprising Foods. Uprising Foods is where you can get your fiber supply every single day, and it's bigger than just a product. I can tell you right now, the guy that reps Uprising Foods, great guy. If anyone is excited as much as he's excited about this thing, I'm telling you, something to get behind. So you right now, if you're like, Charlie, I don't get it. Okay, so here's how it works. I'm celiac. I'm allergic to gluten. This is literally all the protein and all the fiber you need. It comes to you as a Rubik's Cube, and they send it to you super fresh, made in America. You don't have to go shopping for bread or any of that. And it actually tastes really good, but you get fiber. Having a high-fiber diet can prevent against colon cancer and prostate issues, all sorts of stuff. And they have these chips that are really, really, really good. So here's what you do. You go to uprisingfood.com and use the code KIRK to get $10 off the starter bundle. It's kind of like a mini trip to the grocery store, minus all the unhealthy distractions. and they ship directly to your door. That's uprisingfood.com. Use my promo code Kirk. It's literally fresh bread to you, full of fiber, full of protein. Uprisingfood.com, promo code Kirk.
So I was talking about the Hispanic vote. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence I could share that would explain why they are the one racial group that supports the recall. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence, but the question is sort of why? Why would that trend be happening? And I'm so fascinated by this because I'm going to start this segment by playing a clip from Newt Gingrich this morning on Fox Business. Now, Newt is a friend of the show. He's come on. He's a friend of Charlie's in general. But here's what's interesting. So I saw that he was trending on Twitter, and I knew that I really wanted to speak about immigration. I want to talk about this Hispanic vote, the trends that are happening. And then he's trending on Twitter because he is the quote-unquote newest person to go on Fox and talk about replacement theory. Let's talk about that after we play this clip. But go ahead and play cut, and we'll discuss.
Is that the anti-American left would love to drown traditional classic Americans with as many people as they can who know nothing of American history, nothing of American tradition, nothing of the rule of law. And I think that when you go and you look at the radical left, this is their ideal model, is to get rid of the rest of us because we believe in George Washington or we believe in the Constitution. And you see this behavior over and over again.
Now, Newt is not wrong. This is the game they play, right? They're trying to replace us. If you say those words, that is, then you're instantly lumped into this replacement theory, which is considered a fringe ideological conspiracy theory, and it's supposed to be hateful and racist and xenophobic and all of these things. The problem is, and we touched on this in a previous episode, previous show, is that it has the unfortunate fact that it tends to be true, and the Democrats talk about this, how that they celebrate the demographic change, they celebrate how Texas is going to turn blue, in their opinion, which I actually don't think is going to happen. But they celebrate that because they think that this demographic replacement is actually going to usher in this single-party rule of Democrats from coast to coast leading the nation. That if you have a predominantly brown population, they are just going to vote Democrat, no questions asked. Now, this is what makes California so fascinating. So a little history lesson. And by the way, this is not just California. We're seeing this in the Biden White House. And I'll get to that in just a second. We are seeing a reversal perhaps, and it took a generation, from what they call Prop 187. Now, this was in 1994. Illegal immigration was surging, especially through San Diego. I mean, the stories that you hear out of San Diego from this time are just – they're sort of mind-blowing. And they are mind-blowing only until you think about what we have going on now, which is very similar. People just walking across the border. We've got people in these tents that have been set up in McAllen, Texas, and thousands of immigrants under bridges. They know they're just going to be walked in and then bussed out or shipped out or flown out into the interior, never to return again. Now, what they had in the 90s was not dissimilar. People, apparently, when the sun would go down, all of these migrants would wait on the Mexican side of the border, and they're illegals. Let's not use the euphemisms of the left. They're illegal immigrants. They're breaking our laws and our customs and flouting the rule of law in this country. They would wait on the other side of the border. The sun would go down. They would stream across. And the stories that you hear from the early 90s was just thousands every night. There was people with like juice stands and, you know, almost like a fair-like atmosphere because they're feeding these illegals as they would cross over. This became a rallying cry in the state in the 90s. Now, you got to remember, the state voted for George H.W., voted for Reagan, obviously, in the 80s. This is the state of Nixon and the Reagan Library and President Reagan, obviously. It was sort of reliably red and, at the very worst, purple. The change with Prop 187 is that there was a was basically an effort to make it illegal for illegal immigrants to use public services. It was anything from home, from schools to the healthcare, non-emergency healthcare. It basically touched on nearly everything. If you were illegal, you were not able to use public services from the taxpayers. It passed. It passed in 1994. Prop 187, which was called the Save Our State Prop, passed in California 60-40. Ultimately, it was ruled unconstitutional. We got a Governor Gray Davis who ended up getting recalled, but he basically shelved it. It was a total travesty, actually, that the voters voted for something. It was basically slow-walked and then ruled unconstitutional. So the voters of the state of California never got what they voted for. Now, could there have been certain aspects of that bill that were unconstitutional? Sure. Should they have tweaked certain things? Probably. But the fact of the matter is, they never got what they wanted. Now, the predominant theory is that Hispanics turned on the GOP after Prop 187. Now, I don't necessarily know that that's true. I think it's probably mostly true. You fast forward a generation where their kids could actually vote, and probably there was some hangover that from Prop 187. But the bottom line is the California conservatives didn't get what they wanted, and there was a stream of immigrants. Now, let's fast forward to what we have today. And I've talked to many Hispanics in California that feel this way. I've heard this also from Hispanics that I talked to when I was in Texas recently. Law and order is so top of mind for the Hispanic electorate that it is beginning to supersede some of those past allegiances. Take this Emerson poll in California as just one example. Crime, this is month over month, is now 6% more important than it was just last month. 6% more important than just last month. Why are we seeing that? Because crime is on the rise all across the country. Specifically in California, you could shoplift up to $950 and just walk out of the store. Nobody's going to do anything to you because it's a misdemeanor and it's not worth the paperwork. So crime is on the rise. Now, if you are Hispanic immigrant, maybe you're second generation, maybe you've climbed into the middle class in America, and you see the lawlessness, the chaos of the left, not to mention the fact that they're pro-abortion, that they tend to be advocates for dismantling traditional ideas about the family and gender and faith. So not only do you have a predominantly Catholic group that's saying, okay, well, at least you had my back and with the Prop 187 days, but so I'm going to overlook some of these social issues because, you know, GOP's racist. Well, all of a sudden, you got the Democrats who are standing in way of common sense reform to stop crime, to stop homelessness. They make it harder to do business, harder to thrive. And the very things that they look to America as this beacon on the hill of law and order, of safety, of security, of a distinct change in culture from what was south of the border where it was lawlessness and crime and danger and no jobs, all of a sudden they realize that all of this is coming together a generation later. The party that they used to be so enamored by is turning their back on them and taking them for granted. And guess what? The White House knows this. They are in full panic mode. PJ Media, Democrats panic as Latinos and Asian voters leave the party. What are the trends that we are seeing and why does it matter? Why is it so important? Okay, so you got Newt Gingrich trending on Twitter because he's spouting off about replacement ideology, which is, you know, fringe conspiracy theorists for far right trolls on the internet. No, actually, Democrats have admitted that they are pro-demographic replacement. Why does any of this surprise us when we have things like CRT raging throughout our institutions, especially our schools, that are essentially anti-white, racialized Marxism? Why should we be surprised that there's such a strong anti-white sentiment within the Democrat community that they are cheering, and they have been for years, by the way. We're just sort of finally – we call it the great awakening of America to the wokeness. So we are becoming awake to the wokeness. So we're not, this is not replacement, some fringe thing. I mean, they're just really proud about it. But this is the great irony of it. Now, I am very anti-illegal immigration. I'm actually very in favor of decreasing legal immigration. I think 1.2 million legals is far too much. So let's take that down by like, you know, half, if not three quarters. I'm not even kidding. I think there's good immigrants and then there are not so good immigrants. And I think illegal immigration is an absolute travesty. Nevertheless, the sweet irony of all of this, and we saw this recently with the Cuban crisis that has erupted, that the Democrats are very happy to take future Democrat voters, or who they think are going to be Democrat voters, from the Northern Triangle. This is Nicaragua, El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala. From Mexico, they're very happy to take those immigrants. And they're very happy to basically make claims that the border is totally under control when it's not, because actually they're playing a long game. And they call that replacement theory or ideology. It's total garbage. It's actually just calling a spade a spade. We know what they're up to. We know what it is. And yet, look at these headlines. These are from today, folks. Biden tries to stem the alarming flow of minority voters away from Democrats ahead of midterm elections. That's from the Washington Examiner. PJ Media, Democrats panic as Latinos and Asian voters leave the party. How about the Atlantic? Voters who could turn California red. The state GOP's comeback runs through Latino communities. What's really interesting about this is that they are specifically highlighting Mexican-American communities in Los Angeles County, in Orange County, in Ventura County, the types of people that helped push Mike Garcia over the finish line, Michelle Steele, Young Kim, and others. So we saw this break. We saw that predominantly Hispanic communities in the Rio Grande Valley flipped for Trump for the first time in many cases ever. And we have a massive amount of panic. Now, the question then becomes, why? Why? Now, this is the key. If you don't remember anything else that I said, just sort of general stats kind of brush over your head, and I understand that. Sometimes it's hard to grasp these things or keep them in your mind. But notice that big changes are happening within the Hispanic community, and you ask yourself why. They happened under Trump. Now, what you're going to see happen is you're going to see the political class and the punditry class, they're going to come in and they're going to say one thing. We have to distance ourselves from the inflammatory rhetoric of President Donald Trump if we are going to win over these reachable Latinos in the middle. That is wrong. Our consultancy class has been wrong for decades when it comes to minority voters. They saw in President Trump a strong leader, somebody that would help lead them to better financial progress. They saw somebody that was tough on law and order, that he was tough on crime, and he was tough on the border. Now, if you are Hispanic, and this is counterintuitive, if you are Hispanic, you don't just naturally support more illegal immigration. The truth is, I think, much more subtle. There is a large percentage of people that are already on this side that say, you know what? The less illegals that are coming through, the better that is for my job prospects. The higher the wage I can charge, the more I'm going to thrive. And I don't want them bringing chaos into this country that I've fled to. So do not let them pander to the weak side of this argument, to the middle, the mushy middle. It was strength that started this trend. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. Again, this was producer Andrew, honored to be filling in for Charlie. Thank you for supporting our show. If what we do here means something to you, if you get something out of it, we always appreciate you going to charliekirk.com/support and helping us out. You guys give us courage to say the truth, to speak loudly and proudly and boldly in the face of a lot of, let's just say, censorship, headwinds, people that don't want us to talk about these things. Thank you so much for all that you do for us. We greatly appreciate it. Again, this is Andrew filling in for Charlie Kirk. We'll see you next time.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.